Yeah, so Surya gave a wonderful theoretical tutorial in the morning. Now I want to show you an application of compressive sensing. So we use it to reconstruct the sparse feedforward neural network. So in this talk, I will show you both simulation results and also results from a real experiment. So the most direct way to probe synaptic connections is to use pair recording. So you use one electrode to stimulate a potential presynaptic neuron and monitor using another electrode of the subthreshold membrane voltage of the postsynaptic neuron. Since the number of potential synaptic connections scales with the square of the network size, this method is insufficient to reconstruct the complete neural circuit. So the method can be scaled to map multiple synaptic connections to a neuron by combination of intracellular recording and photostimulation. So schematically, the method can be represented like this. You use an electrode to monitor the subthreshold voltage of the postsynaptic neuron, and using a scanning electron beam to sequentially stimulate the potential presynaptic neuron. Mathematically, if you write this protocol in a linear algebra form, you have these matrix equations. So Y represents the response at the postsynaptic neuron, and X is the presynaptic, the synaptic weight vector we want to discover, and A is the stimulation matrix. Here it is an identity matrix. During each try, we stimulate only one neuron. So there are problems with this method. One problem is that it is very inefficient because we know that the neurons are very sparsely connected. The most of the stimulation will produce zero postsynaptic response. The other drawback of this brute force method is that it cannot be paralyzed with multiple neuron recording, because multiple whole cell patch recording is impractical, and the method which allows multiple neuron recording, such as calcium imaging or multi-electrode array, can only monitor the spiking activity of the postsynaptic neuron. And we know that the majority of the connections are too weak to excite a postsynaptic action potential. So this method can only used to resolve the strongest connections in the network. We propose to overcome these difficulties by multiple neuron excitation. So in each try, we randomly stimulate a subset of potential presynaptic neurons, and we assume that the synaptic response are linearly summed at the postsynaptic side. The goal is to resolve individual synaptic connections from this combined response. So in a matrix form, we have this. So again, that each row of the stimulation matrix represents a try, and each black box represents the neurons we select to stimulate. It's a random selection of subset of neurons to excite. The benefit of this method is that we know from compressed sensing, we can reconstruct the sparse synaptic weight vector with n much smaller than n trials. Yeah, a random subset. Yeah. M is the number of tries.
Okay. So the number of neurons that are active on the trial is
No, it don't need. Another benefit. Yeah, here is always free. It's just a schematic plot. Okay. Another benefit is multi-neuron stimulation adds up to super threshold current. So it has potential to parallelize this protocol. So this protocol is quite similar to the white noise stimulation for the receptive field mapping using reverse correlation. But the reconstruction algorithm associated with compressed sensing is superior. So here is a repetition of what has been discussed by Surin in the morning. So the classical reverse correlation result is just the pseudo inverse of your underdetermined equations. Then this solution is just the L2 minimization solution. You get a dense solution, which is against our prior knowledge that the synaptic connections is sparse. So if you penalize the absolute value of your synaptic weight vector, you recover a sparse solution. Yes, why is the response at the post-synaptic side?
But it's one number, right?
Yeah, it's one number. So each entry is one number. Why is a vector? Yeah, the peak. Yeah, we assume that the response are linearly summed at the post-synaptic neuron. Now we are, at this moment, I'm only talking about the subthreshold membrane potential. Later, I'll show you how we apply this strategy for spiking neurons, spiking responses. Okay, so it is proven that if A, the stimulation matrix, is a random matrix, then you by taking only M proportional to log N measurements, you can recover the sparse synaptic weight vector perfectly. Here, K represents the number of non-zero synaptic weight, and N is the number of the potential presynaptic neurons. So this is a huge saving of measurement time. Intuitively, hand-waving explanation about this logarithmic dependence can be understood like this. So if we do not have a prior knowledge about the synaptic weight, so to measure N binary connections, we need to take N sequential measurements. This is the brute force method. You have sequential stimulation of the potential presynaptic neurons. Then, if the connections are sparse, to determine the location of K non-zero connections, we have so many ways. So the number of measurements is proportional to this. So the difference from the theory gives a very strong sufficient condition when the stimulation matrix is a Gaussian random matrix. But in reality, the stimulation matrix we need to use is just a binary matrix with ones and zeros. So we did a simulation to test whether this matrix can be used to reconstruct the feed-forward synaptic connections. So the simulation is like this. We have 500 potential presynaptic neurons, and 30 out of these neurons have real connections with the postsynaptic neuron. And the synaptic weight is drawn from an empirical exponential distribution. Then we simulate the measurements by multiplying a random binary matrix with the synaptic weight vector to get the response. Then we use compressed sensing recovery algorithms to reconstruct the synaptic weight. So the result is shown like this. You can see that the sparse synaptic weight vector is recovered perfectly. As a comparison, we also show a reverse correlation or a minimum energy reconstruction result. You can see that the result is sparse. Yeah, I forgot to mention that the reconstruction using compressed sensing takes only 200 trials. So it's a huge saving of measurement time. Then the problem is, what's the fraction of neurons needs to be stimulated each time? So in the simulation shown in this slide, each time we stimulate 50 neurons, so it's around 10%. We don't have, analytically, we don't know what's the optimal number of neurons needs to be stimulated per trial. But there should be some optimal number, because if you stimulate one neuron per trial, you go back to the brute force method. And if you stimulate all neurons in every trial, you have redundant measurements. You cannot get the correct solution. So luckily, the optimal number of neurons needs to be stimulated per trial has a flat optimum. So in real experiment, it's not very hard to handle the number of neurons to be stimulated. We also tested using simulation to see the dependence of the number of measurements required on the sparsity of the network and the size of the network. It follows this asymptotic behavior. You mean synaptic noise?
No, that 4 times out of 5 an average synapse doesn't
reduce. Yeah, so this is this slide. You mean synaptic failure, right?
Yeah.
So in real experiment, there are all kinds of noises. So why is the synaptic post-synaptic voltage varies from trial to trial? And here is the synaptic failure. It has some probability to fail. And also another source of noise is the high intensity localized photostimulation is imprecise. So sometimes you stimulate a different subset of neurons from the subset you intend to stimulate. So we simulated all these conditions. We found that although the noise interfered with the reconstruction, but the performance is no worse than the brute force method with much less number of measurements. Okay. The advantage of the compressed sensing reconstruction algorithm is that it is the protocol is non-adaptive, so you can use a single pass of stimulation to reconstruct multiple neuron connections in parallel. But the problem with this framework is that you cannot do patch recording for multiple neurons. The only information you can get from the postsynaptic neuron is the spike trains. So the measured response is quantized by the integer number of spikes. In this case, the information contained in each measurement is less informative than analog measurements of the subthreshold membrane potential. So a large number of trials is required if you want to reconstruct the connective from the recorded spike trains. So we tested this framework using a similar simulation setup. The only difference that we put the response at the post-synaptic neuron to halfway rectify to generate the instantaneous firing rate, then the firing rate is fed to the Poisson spike generator to generate spike trains. We use a rectifying threshold that results in 10% of the spiking tries. So a natural comparison of the compressed sensing reconstructions framework is the classical spike triggered average. We can see that we can achieve the same performance with much smaller number of trials. So until now, I talk about the simulations. Then we test this framework in real experiment. So the easiest way to do that is to map the retinal ganglion cell receptive field using white noise stimulus. So the classical way is the spike triggered average. It takes into account only those trials triggering a spike, which typically constitute a minority. So you need long recordings to obtain reasonable receptive field. So everything gets more complicated if you want to use it in real case. So we have a framework like this. So Y again is the time dependent response at the retinal ganglion cell. And X is the spatial temporal kernel. So we assume that each stimulation, in this schematic plot, we assume that each stimulation frame contains 4 pixels, and each pixel has a temporal kernel with 4 different time points. So the response at each time point is the product of the stimulus at each pixel times the temporal kernel of this pixel. Here we need to notice that what is sparse for the spatial temporal kernel is in the spatial domain, but in the temporal domain, the vector x is not sparse. So we cannot naively penalize the L1 norm of the vector x. We should enforce the group sparsity. So we assume that within each group, I mean within each temporal kernel, the vector is not necessarily sparse. But some pixels are never generate response at the ganglion cell. You should set the whole group to be zero. So we have a penalty function like this. If you remove the temporal kernel, then XGI, the vector, has only one entry. It's a scalar. It goes back to the original L1 minimization problem. It is sparse in the spatial domain, but not sparse in the temporal domain, because you use a wide field stimulus. Yeah, receptive. Yeah, it's a few pixels. Yeah, you don't know where is the receptive field. You use a wide field stimulus. Okay, so first we test the reconstruction from intracellular recordings of voltage clamped current on the binary checkboard stimuli. So we compared the compressed sensing reconstruction with the reverse correlation reconstruction. So the top panel shows the spatial kernel of the receptive field averaged over several frames. You can see that with less time, we can get a reasonably good receptive field with less noise. And the bottom panel represents the temporal kernel at each spatial pixels. So we evaluate the reconstruction performance by calculating the correlation coefficient between the actual response at the retinal ganglion cell and the response calculated from the reconstructed receptor field. So you can see here, compressive sensing reconstruction is superior to the reverse correlation reconstruction. Okay. I think it's different. You mean after getting the receptive field using reverse correlation, you threshold it, right?
Yeah, you said all pixels or all the part of receptive field that are within the noise is zero.
Yeah, I don't think this intuition is correct. So you can see an example here. So suppose we get the reverse correlation reconstruction. You threshold it. You are not getting the correct result. Right? So the green line, you cannot do. Yeah, it's not exactly the same. Yeah, it would be worse if you're using reverse correlation plus thresholding. Yeah.
The threshold, and then recalculate all the other coefficients, and then rechecks whether the threshold is one should be left out or not. So it is a more sophisticated and self-consistent way of doing the threshold.
Okay. Yeah, it would be nice if we can have a repeated the recording of the response of the retinal ganglion cell with a repeated stimulus. Then in that way, we can analyze the intrinsic variability of it.
Because you presented
these
stimulus only once.
Yeah. Yeah, we only have 900 seconds recordings, so some. Okay, another experiment done is the reconstruction from spiking trains. So the result is like this. So with much less number of spikes, we can get a receptive field with less noise. So the performance looks like this. So the key point here is that we can reconstruct the receptive field within much less time. So this may help experiment starting fast adaptation. So here's my last slide. So we have two flavors of the reconstruction algorithm. First is the reconstruction of synapses onto one neuron using intracellular recording. And the second is the parallel reconstruction of complete feed-forward network using calcium imaging or multi-electrode arrays. Here's an acknowledgement. Thank you very much. There are tons of L1 minimization software. You can grab anyone. So for receptive field, we use a software called Group Lasso. It does such optimization. You can find it online. There's no special software. It's open source. Yeah, we don't have. Yeah, I see. I don't. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
related to nonlinear information or
inhibition? I can show you some figures. So first, with nonlinearity, the performance gets worse. But anyway, it's better than reverse correlation. And the second, if the, here we, if you want to include the pairwise interactions, you can expand your stimulation matrix. It's similar to some kernel trick or something like this. So you can do this way. Inhibition. Actually, here we don't care whether the synaptic connection is positive or negative. Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah, if you want to record from spiking train.